there.
Okay, welcome to the practice and pshat on the parsha this week. Parsha's Kisetze. Kisetze is a sedra that has more mitzvahs than any other single mitzvah in the entire Torah, any other single parsha in the entire Torah. By the account of the Sefer HaChinuch, there are 74 mitzvahs in Parsha's Kisetze, which if you do the math, is more than 10% of the Tariag mitzvahs. In any event, one of the phrases that appears is the phrase "Ki yikach ish isha" in Parshas Kisetze. Now that pasuk is actually an introduction to what happens, what it means a man takes or acquires a wife and gets married, and goes on to discuss what happens if after a while, after some time, they decide they should get divorced. For whatever reason, he doesn't want to remain married to her. So the Torah goes on to describe the process of giving a get. And, you know, the fact that a husband can't just divorce a wife without a document and so on, that's what's going on in that little section of this week's Sedra. However, from the phrase, Ki yikach ish isha, the opening phrase, before we get to anything about divorce, the Chazal learned from here that that's a pasuk which tells us something about how you get married in the first place. Ki yikach ish isha. Yikach means kicha, or a form of kinyan, a form of acquisition. Acquisition here does not mean ownership. A man does not own his wife. Wife is not property. That was never the case according to Jewish law. But rather an acquisition in the sense of a change of status. Change of status. When you acquire something, when you buy something, so there's a change of status on that item, right? Before the item belonged to person A, now I bought it, so it belongs to me. It belongs to person B who paid for it. The change of status. So when a woman gets engaged to a man, so that's a change of halachic status. So in that sense, that's the kinyan that's referred to here. Before she's betrothed to this man, she's allowed to marry anyone she wants. Now she's betrothed to this man, she's limited to being with this man and no other man unless she gets a get or unless he dies. Now, we know that there are two stages to the Jewish marriage. Right? The Jewish marriage has two stages. It was called Erusin or Kiddushin. It's the same thing. Two different words for the same thing. Erusin and Kiddushin. And then there's the Nisuin. Working backwards, the Nisuin, we'll assume for now, the Nisuin is the chuppah. Right, when they stand under the chuppah and several brachas are recited, sheva brachas, seven brachas are recited under the chuppah. And some say the what follows the chuppah, the yichud, that the husband and wife, the bride and the groom, go in seclusion to a room somewhere by themselves. So that's the chuppah, that's the nisuin. But before that comes the kiddushin of the erusin. What's that? So that's when the groom gives the bride something of value. And that's where our pasuk comes in, ki yikach ish isha. So one of the means of one of the ways that the man acquires a wife, so to speak, okay, the Maisa Kiddushin, the Maisa Erisin, is through giving something of value, because the word Ki Yikach implies a kinyan, a transaction, or a change of status achieved through money, through Kesef, Kesef Kiddushin. And that's learned because when Avraham Avinu, back in Parshas Chayesora, purchased a burial plot for his wife Sarah, it says there, Nasati Kesev Asode Kach Memena. He purchased this field and the cave that was in it, in which Sarah was ultimately buried, and later Avraham, of course, himself was buried there. So we have the purchases from a gentleman by the name of Ephron, and it says Kicha Kicha Miste Ephron. Just like over there, it says Nasati Kesev Asode Kach Memena. He acquired the property through Kesev. So too the Kinyan, since the same verb is used, Ki Yikach Ish Isha. So one of the ways in which one, quote-unquote, acquires, again, it's different, you don't own the wife, but again, this change of halachic status, this form of kinyan, also can be done through money. Our practice nowadays, at least in Ashkenazic circles, is not to use actual money, but to use what's called shoveh kesef, something worth money. And the standard practice, already mentioned in the Sefer Chinuch and in the days of Rishonim, is to use a ring. We give a ring that's worth a certain minimal amount, and by accepting that the husband makes a declaration, I'm giving you this ring in order to accomplish kiddushin or erusin, and she accepts it. So then now they're it's in front of two witnesses, so who are not related to each other, not related to the bride or the groom. So these lay witnesses. That's the first stage of the marriage, the kiddushin or the erusin. Then following now nowadays the nisuin takes place about 10 minutes later, right? Usually they read the ksuba. And sometimes somebody, a rabbi, somebody gives a little drusha. And then they go on to the chuppah and they said, they're under the chuppah the whole time. They go on to the sheva brachos and they go to yichud. So tonight, nowadays, we do it the same night or the same afternoon. It's all done together. At one time, the kiddushin was done months before, right? And then the nisuin was done later. It's similar to what we have today with engagement. That's why sometimes people translate kiddushin and erusin as engagement. But it's not really a fully correct translation, because it's not the way we use the word engagement today. When we say in English today, the couple got engaged, okay, wish them mazel tov, but it has absolutely no halachic standing whatsoever. Okay, just has no legal standing of American law either, right? They can decide the next day they want to break up and nobody owes anybody anything, okay? When we say today that a couple's engaged, it means they've committed to each other, they're going to get married, and the parents probably met, and then they have to find a hall or a caterer and a band or whatever else you need, flowers, okay? And then they send the invitations out and so on, but they're engaged. But again, it has no halachic standing. There's no halachic ramification to that, just like there's no legal ramification to what we call engaged. When we speak in, we're talking about now this kiddushin or erusin, that kind of engagement, which is usually translated as betrothal, that has halachic standing. Because at that point, once the husband is given the ring, well, it doesn't have to be a ring. As I said before, it could be money, it could be anything of value. Our minhag is to use a ring. Well, Ashkenaz, I think there's some Sfaradim use coins. But anyway, when the groom gives that to the bride, so now that she is she's mikudeshes to this husband, to this man, now there's halachic standing. If they decide to break up this relationship now, she will require a get. So there are ramifications as opposed to the English word engagement. But in any event, at one time, the kiddushin and the nisun were separated sometimes by months. And nowadays, our practice is, as far as I know, b'chol tzvutzis Yisrael, is that the kiddushin and the nisun are done at the same time. You know, first they do the kiddushin, everyone walks down the aisle, whatever, then under the chuppah, so the groom gives the bride the ring in the presence of two witnesses, and makes that declaration, and then a few minutes later, they say the seven brachas, and they go off to yichud by themselves, so it's all done in one shot. What I'd just like to look at for a moment in terms of our practice, so it's interesting, the Rambam, based on this pasuk, ki yikach ish isha, counts the mitzvah of being mekadesh a woman and betrothing a woman as one of the tayag mitzvahs, one of the 613 mitzvahs. Different mitzvahs have children, but in terms of the marriage, the Rambam quotes, and I think it's mitzvah reish yud beis in the mitzvah saseh 212. Rambam says there is a mitzvah to betroth a woman through the proper means and so on and so forth, and which means that according to the Rambam, when the groom gives the bride the ring and he makes that declaration in front of two kosher witnesses, that is the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Now, there is a bracha that's recited in association with this erusin. Actually, two brachas. One is Bar Per Goffin, right? Certain brachas we enhance by having a cup of wine, like we do by Kiddush and Havdalah. Okay, so here too, that's by Bris Mila. We also have a cup of wine. So here too, there's a Birchas erusin. There's a bracha on this act of erusin. It's preceded by a Bar Per Goffin. Then there's another bracha, Shek and Shom Sono, Arayos, whole text, whole bracha, and that's called the Birchas Erusin. Who should recite the Birchas Erusin? Well, according to the Rambam, certainly the groom should recite the bracha. That's the Rambam writes, the third parak of Hilchos Ishus, so the end of the parak. The Rambam writes, this is a bracha like any other bracha on any other mitzvah. And the person performing the mitzvah is the one who recites the bracha. So according to the Rambam, the groom recites the bracha because he's doing the mitzvah. But right before he gives the ring, he should say this bracha. And like any other mitzvah that a person performs, he recites the Birchas HaMitzvah. As you know, that's not our practice. The groom does not, in fact, recite this bracha. I don't think certainly not by Ashkenaz, not by Sfaradim either. The groom doesn't recite the bracha. Who recites the bracha? The so-called Misara Kedushin. That could be sometimes it's the grandfather or the boy's Rebbe or his Rosh Hashiva, something like that. Someone they want, the rabbi, the shul, someone they want to honor. Okay? So it's considered a big honor. So they call up Rabbi so-and-so to be the Masada Kiddush, and he recites the bracha. According to the Rambam, what's that about? The rabbi's not getting married tonight. The groom is getting married. So why should the rabbi be the one to recite the bracha? So according to the Rambam, he's not. According to the Rambam, it's the groom's bracha. He recites it. That's what it says in the Rambam. Now, the fact is, it appears that not all Rishonim agree with the Rambam that engagement or erusin, to be a Mekadesh woman, is in fact a mitzvah asay. Others assume that the Rosh seems to write this way in the first parak in Ksubas, and other Rishonim say there is no such mitzvah. There is a mitzvah of purvu, to procreate, to have children, and there is a method through which, so to speak, a person properly relates to a woman with whom he's going to have children. But there's not an independent mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah per se. It's part of a process, so to speak, okay, and it's a required process, but it's not a mitzvah per se, in which case there really shouldn't be a bracha at all, right? There's no bracha. that we recite what bracha. It's just a method of acquiring a wife, ultimately to have children. But it's not, and again, even if one's older and already had children, and they're not going to have any more children or something like that. But leaving that point out, the point is that the mitzvah, so to speak, is not a mitzvah to get married. There is no mitzvah, independent mitzvah. The Rambam says there is. There is no independent mitzvah to get married, to have the act of kiddushin and so on. Now, with this in mind, so according to this approach, we can understand why somebody else recites the bracha. And that indeed is how some achronim write, that the bracha on the erusin, this bracha, is not a birchas hamitzvah at all, because there is no such mitzvah. What is it? It's in the category of a birchas shevach v'hodah. It's a bracha praising God for giving us these rules and so on, and presenting us that he doesn't want us to, and he wants us to marry in a certain way and so on, but it's not a birchas hamitzvah per se. And therefore, who can recite this bracha? Anybody present, anybody who's there can recite it. It was part of the event, right? There's no mitzvah. It's not a birchas hamitzvah. Now, it does have the expression, asher kiddushanu mitzvosav v'tzivanu. Okay, it's true, which is usually a telltale sign. You know, we have three different categories of brachas, right? So there's brachas on food, brachas on enon, shakol ne'abidvaro, bar peragaf, and so on. Then there's a bracha on shevach hodah, praising God. For example, early this evening, we heard thunder, lightning, and so on. So we say those brachas. Those are brachas of shevach hodah. And the third category of brachas is brachas ha-mitzvah. Usually, when a bracha has the phrase, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu, that means it's a brachas ha-mitzvah. So this bracha, the Birchas Erusin, does have that phrase, Asher Kedushon Zavetzivano, in it, which is why we would think it's a Birchas HaMitzvah. But it's not an earth-shattering question, because there are other exceptions also. There are other brachas that have the phrase. For example, the whole discussion, you know, about shechting. When you shecht an animal, is that a mitzvah? Well, yeah, if you want to eat meat, you have to shecht. Let's say I don't want to have meat. Is there a mitzvah to go shecht an animal? There's only a mitzvah of shechita. If to have meat, those who want to have meat. Someone doesn't want to have meat, there's no mitzvah of shechita, right? So that's, now the shochet, before shechting, recites a bracha. When you put on tefillin, so there's a mitzvah to put on tefillin, to have to make a bracha. Before I eat matzah, I have to make a bracha. Before I hear shofar, we're going to make a bracha. Those are mitzvahs. But shechita is not a mitzvah. Shechita allows us to eat meat, but there's no mitzvah necessarily to eat meat at any particular time. So therefore, there are some who suggest that the bracha and the shechita is what we call a bracha shevach hodah, even though it has the phrase asher kiddushanu mitzvosav v'tzivanu. Nevertheless, it's not an outright mitzvah. So that's what some suggest here also. Rabbi Salvechik, the Rav, once suggested a different approach. He said it's a bracha, sometimes make a bracha on a change of halachic status, like I alluded to before. So before when the animal's still alive, not allowed to eat it. That's called evim menachai. I can't take meat from an animal that's still alive, cut off a part of the animal, eat it. That would not be allowed. So now that you shechted it, I can eat it. So it's a change of halachic status. So with a woman getting engaged, it's also a change of halachic status. Other mitzvahs like that. So whatever it is, though, according to this approach, it's not a birchas hamitzvah. It's not a birchas hamitzvah. Anybody can say it. And therefore, the so-called Masada Kedushin, the rabbi, the Rosh Hashiva, the rabbi, whoever it is, says the bracha, because it's not the groom's bracha. It's a bracha on the event, so to speak. And therefore, anybody can recite it. And that's our practice. However, according to the Rambam, we have a little bit of a question. According to the Rambam, how can it be that the Rambam holds it to it is a mitzvah? Erusin, getting married, kikach ishisha, is a mitzvah. If it is a mitzvah, so then the bracha should properly be recited by the one who's performing the mitzvah, and that is the groom. And it's that's not our practice. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't work if someone else recites the bracha. We have a practice that someone can recite a bracha, birchas hamitzvah, on behalf of somebody else, even though he was yotzi himself, afa pishi yotzi motzi, right? So if I already heard shofar, now I'm going to blow the shofar for somebody else, I can say the bracha on the shofar too again. But the question is, why do we set it up that way? Why do we do it that way? Let's say the groom wants to say the bracha. Our practice, the groom doesn't say it at all. The groom never says the bracha. What happened over here? One second. Excuse me for one second. I apologize. One of my grandchildren was playing here. Sorry. Anyway, he's out. Okay. Anyway, be that as it may. So, according to the Rambam, why does the why does the groom not say the bracha? According to Rambam, we should, but why don't we do it? So the Beis Shmuel, other commentaries say, because the simple reason, Kidei shelo levayesh es mi she'eino yodea. Really, it is the groom's bracha. But you know, it's a bracha that doesn't come up that often, right? You hopefully only get married once. And it's a little difficult. It's an unusual bracha, some of the words. So can you imagine a groom is very nervous? Sometimes the groom cannot even get out that line, harayat mikodeshes li. Right? That's to say to his wife, I'm hereby betrothing myself to you, and so on and so forth. They have to help him along with that bracha. They show it to him on a card. He's so nervous, you know. A groom is very nervous the night of the wedding. And especially now, everything is on video and everything is being recorded and this and that. He's very nervous. So he doesn't read Hebrew so well, or he gets nervous. He's going to botch up the bracha. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. So therefore, they made a rule that no groom, even if he's not embarrassed, even a groom speaks Hebrew very well, he's a chief rabbi, he's a big Talmid Chacham, whatever. They made a rule, somebody else should say the bracha. Okay, we're sensitive to the dignity of the person. We're sensitive to the dignity of every groom, because there's some grooms who don't know how to say the bracha properly, or they're going to botch it up, and you know they're not comfortable with it. So therefore, somebody else does it. We find such a source for this in the Mishnah Maseches Bikurim. The Mishnah describes that when you bring the first fruits, the farmers who bring the first fruits to Yerushalayim, that's actually in next week's sedra. In next week's sedra, Parshas Kisavo, there's a whole text that's to be recited. But the Chachamim found that certain farmers were embarrassed to come to the Beis HaMikdash with their fruits because they were not comfortable reading this text, and they were stumbled over the words. It was embarrassing. They didn't want to embarrass themselves. They stopped bringing the Bikurim altogether. So they made a rule that from now on, the Kohen will always recite the Psukim. Kedei Shalavayish, not to embarrass them. And it doesn't matter who the farmer could be a very learned and a very, great Hebrew reader. A blanket rule, somebody else says the Psukim. The Kohen says the Psukim no matter what. That way, everybody's encouraged, and nobody's going to know why this particular farmer didn't say the bracha. We don't know that he's ignorant. All the farmers don't say it. So all the farmers don't say it, he doesn't say it either. It's to protect the person's dignity. So that's what we say over here, that even though it's the groom's bracha, but to protect the dignity of every groom, even those chasanim, even those grooms who maybe wouldn't be so comfortable reading the bracha in Hebrew. I remember once, and this is I heard this once, I've told this over many times, I heard this once as a joke, but then I actually witnessed it myself. But the rabbi had to help the chassan say, Harei at mikudesh esli. So the rabbi said, repeat after me, Harei, Harei, at, at, mikudeshes, mikudeshes. And the rabbi then didn't want to say li, because he's not giving us. He said, say li. So the chassan said, say li. So he said, I heard it as a joke, and I said, and the Chara said, no, you say Lee. No, you say Lee. So that is start over again. Right? Sometimes the Chassanim are mixed up. They're nervous and flustered. So therefore, we have this precedent. According to the Rambam, also, even though the Rambam says the bracha belongs to the Chassan, because his mitzvah, nonetheless, that's the reason for our practice. We have two reasons, different reasons why the practice is the so-called Masada Kedushin says the bracha, not the Chassan, either because it's not his bracha any more than anyone else's, because no mitzvah anyway. It's not a real mitzvah. It's a bracha shel vodah. Or because even it is a mitzvah, we don't embarrass anybody. Okay, that's in terms of a practice that we have. The Seder begins, Kiseitze l'melchama alayvecha. That's talking about the Jewish army goes out to war, soldiers go out to war. But Chazal say, sometimes a person wages internal battles. And this is, of course, appropriate for the month of Elul, okay, where we're concentrating, we'll begin to concentrate, looking forward to Yom Noroim, on internal battles we have to wage within ourselves, Mechametz HaYetzer, within ourselves. And how do you go ahead and conquer the Yetzer Hara? That's also a battle. It is a battle and requires strategy. Like any other battle, battling the Yetzer Hara requires strategy, requires effort. Sometimes it's painful, sometimes it's not so simple. But one aspect of the Yetzer, I think that we have to worry about conquering, is the aspect of the Yetzer which leads us to unrealistic expectations of ourselves and of others. Very, very interesting. Later in the Sedra, we have a pasuk, Lo yilbash gever simos isha, okay, that a man is not allowed to wear women's clothing, women shouldn't wear men's clothing, okay? And this is the idea of cross-dressing, and the context and the meaning in terms of the simple pshat is that this is part of licentious, vulgar behavior. A man wants to hang around with women, so he dresses like a woman. A woman wants to hang with men, so she dresses like a man. Again, in the licentious sense of inappropriate sexual conduct. So not a lot of men shouldn't wear women's garment, men, women shouldn't wear men's garment. But some explain, Aldar HaJus told us, Yaakov Yosef explains as follows. He said, forget about gender for a moment. A person shouldn't wear clothing that's more fitting for somebody else. Meaning, a person has to be realistic. A person should not try to wear a garment that really isn't suitable for him. And he's not talking about garments. He's talking about how you carry yourself. Sometimes people, everybody has talents and abilities, but not everybody has the same talents and abilities as everybody else. So sometimes, and many times people mess themselves up by trying to be something that they're not. A person should look to maximize his personal potential. Okay, don't wear clothing of somebody else. Okay, never mind gender. That's a real pshat in the pasuk. And I know that this part is called pshat, so I'm going away from the pshat. But I think there's an important lesson. When we struggle with our yetzer, part of the message or part of the goal has to be realistic. Okay, to be, what can I really accomplish? And what is not within, not my area? Person has to know, not his area, but it comes, tell us a Talmidim comes to the learning also. Some people are better at in-depth analysis of things. Other people are better at bakiyas, at having a breadth of knowledge. A person has to figure out, where can I maximize my potential? Just because the guy next to me can achieve this doesn't mean I can achieve it. And I mentioned this in actually this week in a faculty meeting, you know, at the University of High School. I mentioned that as teachers, that's our great challenge. We want to bring the best out in every student, but it's not, if we set unrealistic goals for Talmidim, okay, then we could end up, God forbid, turning them off. I remember having a conversation with a father, okay, he was disappointed, the boy of the ninth grade, this is years ago, and he said, you know, he doesn't understand why his son is not interested in learning at night. His son didn't want to learn at night. He only wanted to learn for 15 minutes at night. So I said, he's a kid, he's a boy, he hasn't come to that yet. And the father's all angry, and I asked the father, let me ask you a question. When you were 14, did you learn at night? When you were his age, did you learn an hour and a half every night? I know I didn't. I got to be honest. Okay. In other words, everybody's got to figure out what is sometimes to make a person is something that he's not. What's the challenge? The challenge is to make is to balance, is to figure out how can I push a person to maximize his potential without putting him in such a way that he's going to turn himself or turn others off. And that's really the challenge. Okay. In the context of this discussion, told Yaakov Yosef said, that's how he brings a riot that's how they tried to trip up Mordechai in the Purim story. It says, Yasu Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Amo. Build a 50 amo, an enormous tree, an enormous gallows, right? So again, the simple pshat is a gallows, you're going to hang him. Others say, no, this interpretation is, let's elevate him to a position that he's not really suited for, and he'll come tumbling down. Okay? You know what's the expression? The bigger they are, the harder they fall, right? Something to put a person in a position that he's not suited for, he'll fail. Okay? Sometimes people set themselves up or are set up by others, set up to fail because they don't realize that this is not what they can excel in. When a person decides, you know, in terms of his own life and his own aspirations and his own goals, they have to be realistic. Don't settle for mediocrity. Don't settle for mediocrity. You want to have clothes that are better than ones you have now, but they got to fit. Okay, that's what I said. Our goal as teachers is to, you know, is to help the students get clothes that are more impressive, that are finer, that are more beautiful than the clothes they're wearing now, but they have to fit. Okay, if they don't fit, then it's not going to work. Okay, because it means somebody else is wearing clothes that belong to somebody else. We have an expression, Chazal speak, about somebody being ro'oi l'hai itztalo, which means, are you fit? Are you worthy of this fancy garment? Right, whatever the garment happens to be. A person has to know himself. Okay, there's certain people, you know, who can excel at giving tzedakah. So encourage them to give tzedakah. They don't have to be the ones giving a shir between mincha ma'ariv. Maybe that's not their area. Right? And nobody's perfect in every area. Person has to figure out for yourself, and that's this time of introspection, in what area can I excel? Of course, we all have to do that. We all have to give tzedakah, and we all have to learn, and we all have to do chesed, and we all have to be kind to other people, and all that's all true. But in terms of defining who am I as a person, I think Shakespeare has a line in one of the plays, right? For oft clothes proclaim the man, right? Your clothing tell a lot about you. It's true. And you want to have clothing that are impressive looking, that clothing that are nice looking and so on, but it has to fit. You can have a very beautiful garment, right? You can wear a very fancy suit, but if it's six sizes too big or it's six sizes too small, you look foolish, right? It doesn't fit. It may be beautiful, maybe expensive, but it doesn't fit, right? So a person has to figure out what fits. That's part of the Mechemes HaYetzer. So when it says, it's not just talking in the gender sense. The different people, right? There's a Geber, there's an Isha. Again, it doesn't matter the gender, but certain people have these characteristics and those characteristics. Make sure that the clothing that you have is suitable for you. And again, that's the Mechemes HaYetzer. Sometimes people have a Yetzer Hara. And I've seen it among Talmid Chachamim also, and Rabbanim. Okay? Not everybody is such a big darshan, or not everybody's. And sometimes people enter into realms that's not where they, that's not their realm. And it's okay that it's not their realm. Emphasize the realm that you can be matzliach in. Okay, some people are very good activists on behalf of social action, and other people find the area that you can excel in. I think that's the idea, and it's not an area that you can excel in. So make, you know, then that shouldn't be the area that you emphasize. It should be that you emphasize, and you're wearing clothes that fit. They can be attractive, they can be beautiful, and I'm always making efforts to make them nicer and fancier, but it should be something that fits you. And I think that's part of the Mechemes HaYetzer. Ultimately, what keeps a person away from this is, you know, probably certainly one of the worst of all midas, and that's gaiva. Gaiva, too much pride, hubris, right? That a person is, well, I can do this and I can that. People think they can do everything. Nobody can do everything. And a person shouldn't attempt to do everything, because you're setting yourself up for failure, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. And as I said, I explained to teachers, certainly with students, if we're going to make certain demands, yes, we have to raise every student to maximize his potential. But if we're going to look at every single student and think that every single student is going to achieve this, going to accomplish that, then he's going to be disappointed and we're going to be disappointed. And we have what I think is a major malady today, and this is not the time to go into it, if you want to finish up, one of the major problems I think we experience today, you know, as a Jewish community, you know, and I know I can probably get into trouble for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I think it's an important message, okay? I value the importance of learning as much as the next person. My whole life, I value the importance of learning. But not everybody is meant to spend the whole day sitting and learning. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody should be doing it. And yet we have a situation in many communities, in many places, where everybody's expected to spend all his time learning, and certain people aren't cut out for it. And yes, there are records, and we can go into it, of people who are, you know, simply turned off. And they feel that if I'm not successful in learning, so I can't be successful in Yiddishkeit either. And that's not true. Certain people can be, you know, excellent in Chesed. I've mentioned many times, you look at organizations like Hatzalah, organizations like Misaskim, all these other wonderful Chesed organizations. They're not run, for the most part, by guys who are sitting and learning all day. They're run by people who have found other areas to contribute. Of course, you have to learn. Of course, you have to learn. But they're looking for other, they've found to excel in other areas. That's part of, I think, having, that's part of having the right clothes, of not wearing clothes that don't fit, and making sure that while you aspire for greatness, it's greatness within where you can achieve that that kind of greatness. I think that's part of the Mechemes HaYetzer, the fight against that taiva, that desire to be all things to all people, to be excellent in all areas. That's not realistic. Our goals have to be realistic. I wish everybody a good Shabbos. I'm going to disconnect, and I'll connect again for the second shiur in 3 minutes, or 4 minutes, at 9:35. The next shiur will be about Shiluach HaKen. A good Shabbos to all.
Thank you very much.